We hope you enjoy this message from St. Martin C3, a location of C3 Church, Christchurch.
We're finishing off a series today called Transforming Culture. I've loved this series. In it, we have been looking at how our culture should not transform us, but how we can be culture transformers, bringing God's change to the world. We've been traveling in the book of Daniel, and it's been like going to a distant land, trying to understand a completely different culture, but also seeing things which feel so familiar. I don't know how much time you've spent overseas, but there's something unique about going to another country and traveling in a different land. You might not know the language. You might not know the customs. But there are certain ways of doing things that you go, oh, that's just like the way we do things. Because people are people, regardless of the time, regardless of the place. And what we've seen in the book of Daniel is some universal truths. This series has been all about how we can bring culture transformation. Daniel is an ancient book filled with prayers and apocalyptic visions, yet it's so relevant to our lives today. Today what we're going to do is we're going to spend more time in the second half of Daniel. The second half of Daniel is a series of prophetic visions and prayers. Last week, Warren looked primarily at Daniel's chapter 8 and 9 and showed the importance of prayer and asking God to give us awareness of what is happening in people's lives that we might speak God's truth to them. I've heard some great testimonies this week of God moving as people have prayed that prayer. God, show me what's going on in someone's life. So help me to see what I can't see. And we want to encourage you to keep on doing that. And if you've missed any of these messages, I highly recommend that you catch up on them. Go to our website and you can see the entire series there to catch up on. We're looking at these last six chapters of Daniel, and they're hugely significant. They are many-layered prophecies. On one layer, they were dealing with Daniel's world and the things that were of current significance to his world. The events are seen in the next 400 years of Daniel. However, they also have a meaning that speaks to our world and to our time. But more than that, they have a meaning that if you read Daniel, you begin to see some things that will happen at the end of time. In fact, if you want to understand the book of Revelation, can I recommend to you studying these chapters? Today, we're not going to get stuck into all of those details, though. I'd love to be able to do a message where we look at six chapters of the Bible and break down heavily symbolic images and tell you what's going to happen at the end of time. That's just a little bit much for me. So instead, what we're going to do is we're going to explore one of these visions in Daniel chapter 7 and see a key theme that comes out as it relates to us. And the question I want to answer today is this: how do we act as though Jesus is king, even when it doesn't look like it? How do we act as though Jesus is king, even when it doesn't look like it? Daniel 7 begins this way. It says earlier, and this whole vision happens actually between Daniel chapter 4 and 5. Earlier, during the first year of King Belshazzar's reign in Babylon, Daniel had a dream and saw visions as he lay in his bed. He wrote down the dream, and this is what he saw. Now, one of the things that happened to me over lockdown is that I began to have some bizarre dreams. Flying cars and people who I haven't seen for many years. And apparently it was a thing. Lots of people were having really weird dreams. Anyone else go, yeah, I was having, yeah, a few people having really weird lockdown dreams. I don't know what that was about. Well, what we see here is that Daniel has a particularly weird dream, and it's much stranger, just to warn you, than any of our COVID dreams. And the irony here is that Daniel can't interpret it. He needs help from an angel to figure out what's going on. Now, remember, Daniel is known as the guy who interprets dreams. And the really funny thing is this dream that he's about to have is actually very, very similar. In fact, some would say it's largely the same as the dream that Nebuchadnezzar had in Daniel chapter 2. You know, Nebuchadnezzar has this dream of a statue with four different parts to it. Well, Daniel's dream is basically the same thing, but just seen in a different way. And this dream is the first of four visions in these final chapters. And they're given over a period of 20 years. They're all reasonably similar in their big picture, but in each successive vision, more detail is given as well as adding new information. Let's see the dream Daniel has in Daniel chapter 7. In my vision that night, I, Daniel, saw a great storm churning the surface of a great sea with strong winds blowing from every direction. And this here, the sea here, is a picture of the world in a state of turmoil. Verse 3. Then four huge beasts came up out of the water, each different from the others. So just hold on. This is going to get a little bit intense. Sorry, Ignite. I didn't prepare this knowing we're going to be in here. It's going to get weird, all right, guys? We'll just hang on and we'll figure it out as we go. The first beast was like a lion with eagle's wings. As I watched, its wings were pulled off, and it was left standing with its two hind feet on the ground like a human being, and it was given a human mind. Then I saw a second beast, and it looked like a bear. It was rearing up on one side and had three ribs in its mouth between its teeth. And I heard a voice saying to it, "Get up, devour the flesh of many people." Then the third of these strange beasts appeared, and it looked like a leopard. It had four bird's wings on its back, and it had four heads. Great authority was given to this beast. Then in my vision that night, I saw a fourth beast, terrifying, dreadful, and very strong. It devoured and crushed its victims with huge iron teeth and trampled their remains beneath its feet. It was different from any of the other beasts, and it had 10 horns. As I was looking at the horns, suddenly another small horn appeared above them, among them. Three of the first horns were torn out by the roots to make room for it. This little horn had eyes like human eyes and a mouth that was boasting arrogantly. What's going on here? I mean, we thought Daniel was this book filled with children's stories. Now it seems like it's turned into some kind of a horror movie. What's the deal with that change? Well, let's notice a couple of things. First of all, like I said, these four beasts represent four different kingdoms, like the four parts of Nebuchadnezzar's statue. The first beast is like a lion. Now, Daniel 7 goes directly after Daniel 6. And what happens in Daniel chapter 6? Who remembers from a few weeks back? Anyone know what happens in Daniel chapter 6? Flick back in your Bible. It's the lion's den. It's the lion's den, isn't it? And so that is not a coincidence. The first of these beasts is a lion. The first beast is Babylon. And then what follows are successive kingdoms that set themselves up as rulers of this world, defying God. Now, commonly, this is interpreted as the kingdoms in the world that would come next. After the Babylonians came the Medo-Persians, and after them came the Greeks, and then after them came the Romans. And that's kind of the heart of what's going on in these verses. And all of this is quite a lot for Daniel. Several times in these passages, he lets us know the toll that seeing these visions has on him. It says in verse 15, "I, Daniel, was troubled by all I had seen, and my visions terrified me." I'm going, phew, at least it's not just me who finds this bizarre and weird and strange. Daniel did too. He was terrified by what he saw. But what he was terrified by was by more than just the grotesqueness of the image, but by what it represented. Daniel felt completely overwhelmed by what was going on in his world. These seemingly powerful beasts set up to defy God and his people. Have you ever been in the place of Daniel? Maybe it was not a prophetic dream, but you looked at the world around you and you see terrifying things going on. Pandemics, racism, economic instability. 2020 has been a year that we will look back on and think, man, that was a year unlike any other year. That was some kind of a crazy year. Our world to you might seem like a powder keg waiting to blow right now. And that's just at a global level. I know in our lives this year, it has been difficult for people. I know we're in level one, so we're all supposed to be okay, right? But if we're honest, for many, this has been a trying time. Think about the increased demands of lockdown, the time stuck in the small spaces trying to work and look after family at the same time, or being isolated from those we love, or anxious about whether we would still have our job or our pension, and so many other things, sickness that is going on in people's life. The different demands, and we're kind of out of that, but at the same time, there is always the threat we'll go back into it. And we're in Christchurch. We're known as a resilient bunch. And we've been through earthquakes and rebuilds and floods and fires and the mosque shootings. But our resilience, I feel, is not what it used to be. And as I've talked to people, there is a word that describes how I think many of us are feeling. The word is worn. We feel worn. Yes, we're tough, but like the elbow pads on a cardigan, we can only take so much rubbing before there is nothing left. We're troubled, as Daniel was troubled, some of us more than others, but it has been a wearing time. It seems like the world is out of control. And so we ask this question, how do we act as though Jesus is king even when it doesn't look like it? Because if we look at the world right now, in so many ways, it does not look like Jesus is king. And that is why these visions are so important. They give us hope in these times and at any time that we struggle to believe that Jesus is king. The first thing that we can see here is that there is more going on in world events than we can see, more than meets the eye. There is a higher narrative working out. What might seem like a random mix of people's choices, our failures, and chaotic happenings is actually tied together as part of a higher plan. And the second thing is that God knows all of this. Just as he could give it to Daniel in a vision and a dream, he is not surprised by anything that was happening then, and he's not surprised by anything that's happening now. He wasn't surprised when nations rose up against him and his people. He saw it all. And we can take confidence from that. Nothing is outside of the sight of God. Nothing disturbs God. Why is it not disturbing for God? Because as he shows Daniel, he is bigger than all of that. The next verses in Daniel chapter 7 say this. As I watched as thrones were put in place, multiple thrones, and the ancient one, who is otherwise known as the Ancient of Days, sat down to judge. He sat on one of these thrones. His clothing was as white as snow, his hair like purest wool. He sat on a fiery throne with wheels of blazing fire, and a river of fire was pouring out, flowing from his presence. Millions of angels ministered to him. Many millions stood to attend him. Then the court began its session, and the books were opened. I continued to watch because I could hear the little horn's boastful speech. I kept watching until the fourth beast was killed, and its body was destroyed by fire. The other three beasts had their authority taken from them, but they were allowed to live a little while longer. See, while evil powers might seem to thrive in our world, while chaos might seem to reign right now, they will ultimately all be called to judgment. God is the Ancient of Days. Think about that in comparison to the beasts. The beasts are frightening and seem overpowering in the moment, but they are always superseded. Their kingdom does not last. Yet there is one who is majestic and awesome, and he is the Ancient of Days. He is from ancient times and will live into the ancient future. He is greater than all the others. This then is how we act as though Christ is king even when it doesn't look like it. We remind ourselves as many times as we need that he is king. Our God is the Ancient of Days. He holds all of time in his hands. He is Lord of it all. He makes all things new. He holds all things together. And our problem, I think, is that we often see from our perspective. We see what is right in front of us, and we don't necessarily see what is going on in the wider scheme of things. So I'm going to use this whiteboard for a second. You might be able to see it. I'm sorry if it's a little bit far away if you're at the back. But oftentimes, I think we live on a line. It's almost like we're standing over top of a line. This is our experience of the world, and we're looking down on it. And we can see that what's directly in front of us and what's behind us and what's just in front. And we look at that line and we see, coming up, if we're to continue on this track, it looks like disaster. It looks like something disastrous is going to occur in our lives if we stay on this line. And if you're doing that, why would you stay on that line? Why would you stay on that place heading towards disaster? And you say, God, why can I follow you if this is the way the world is going to be? But I think that God sees things differently than that. We look down on the line, but I think God sees in more dimensions than we do. We see it two-dimensionally. And if we were to flip this same line and we were to see it from a different angle, it might look straight from where we are, but what we can't see is the way that God is actually at work in the world. From this angle, it looks like we're heading to disaster. But if we were to see it another way, we would see that God is actually pushing that line up, leading us travel close to disaster, but actually leading us towards our and the world's ultimate good. Sometimes we come close to that. We might say, God, why? Why do we need to? And he doesn't necessarily tell us. But if we were to see things from his perspective, we could see how he could work it all for good. We just need to hang on. To hang on. You know, we sang earlier about God, you're great, and your goodness is never ending. Sometimes we don't believe that. I had a friend who was a Christian, and he prayed and he asked God to speak to him about a career that he should do. He really felt like God was telling him to get involved in a trade. And so he had several signs that seemed to confirm it. But after 5 long years of training and looking for apprenticeships, nothing happened. He also had some other disappointments in his life. And so he gave me a call and he said, I'm done with God. I'm done with God. I give up on God because I don't think that he's good. I think that he is leading me and has led me towards disaster. So I'm giving up on him. You won't see me again. I don't feel like I've ever even heard from God, and I don't think he is good. And so I said, whoa, come on, come into my office. Let's have a chat. Let's talk. And I encouraged him. I quoted scripture to him. I helped him see all the ways that God had been good to him. And there were miracles in his life that he could not deny and did not deny. I helped him see that actually, logically, he still believed in God. When that didn't work, I poked and prodded him. I called him out on a few things. I even called him a name or two in a friendly way. I said, hey, I really care about you, but you're being this. You just got to see that for what it is. And you're saying this to God. I did everything I could. But at the end of it, he walked out of my office, and I haven't seen him since. Why? Because he lost sight that actually there's more going on than just this perspective, standing over the line, looking forward, going, it's just going to lead to disaster. He lost sight that actually God was involved and was influencing him towards ultimate good. He got stuck in darkness, where all he could feel was questions. And his disappointment with God, he lost sight of God. Mike Donaghy, who is the lead singer of the band 10th Avenue North, says this. He says, bitterness is the belief that God got it wrong. Anxiety is the belief that God is not going to get it right. Regret is the belief that the mistakes I made are so bad that God cannot make it beautiful again. Whoa. Bitterness is the belief that God got it wrong. Anxiety is the belief that God is not going to get it right. Regret is the belief that the mistakes I made are so bad that God cannot make it beautiful again. Do any of those describe you this morning? Has your faith in God and his faithfulness been rocked? Do you feel worn? If you do, it's time to remind yourself again that he is the Ancient of Days. He is the one from before time. He is the one from beyond time. He is the one who holds this world together. And he is good. He knows what is going on. And you can always bring yourself back to that. I remember having a difficult situation in my life. It was early in my time working for churches. I was employed by a large church doing a youth work for their high school ministries. We saw slow but steady growth over a couple of years. I loved it. I enjoyed being in the position. I loved the young people. It was great. At the beginning of my third year, I met with the head of the youth team. And he called me into his office and he said, look, just want to let you know, we're making a change. We're going to bring someone new in to do your job. And he's, you know, we think he's just a better leader. He's more charismatic. He's going to do a better job at this than you will. And instead, what we want you to do is work with the wider team. And I was so upset. I grieved losing my position. I thought I was being moved just solely into doing administration all of the time, when I longed to do the ministry of teaching and of pastoring people. I was really angry at him. I was wounded, and I wondered where God was in all of it. Surely if he loved me and called me to do his work, he would have let me stay in that position. I was in that first drawing. I was above the line. All I could see was disaster. I couldn't see the bigger thing that God was doing. It was shortly after that time that our senior pastors came to Joanna and I. We were engaged at the time and said, would you like to go to England and to be involved doing youth ministry and working with a church over there? And if I was still involved in that youth ministry, if I was still in charge of those young people, I would have felt a great difficulty saying yes to that. I would have felt a sense that I was letting them down, that I was leaving them. But because I was in this different position, I was ready to go. I'm ready to be. I was in England for 6 years, and God used that as a significant growth time in my life. God took me past disaster and led me to my ultimate good. And doing that was definitely for my ultimate good. Can you hang on to the goodness of God, even as you face those things that make you feel worn? Can you proclaim him as king, even though it might not look like it right now? Daniel 11 talks of a time when the evilest character we have seen turns up. The choice is then how we will respond. Daniel 11 verse 32 says this. It says that he, this evil person, will flatter and win over those who have violated the covenant. But the people who know their God will be strong and resist him. Who are those who resist the great evil that comes against them? Those who know their God. They know their God. They know that he is the Ancient of Days. That he is the one who knows the beginning from the end. That he is the one who holds all things together. Know him and your world will begin to look different. And then as this passage from Daniel 11 continues, it talks about the resurrection in the beginning of Daniel chapter 12, the first time it's really mentioned directly in the Old Testament. And then Daniel chapter 12 verse 3 says this, Those who are wise will shine as bright as the sky. And those who lead many to righteousness will shine like the stars forever. We've named this series Transforming Culture because those who stay faithful to God are those who lead many to righteousness and shine like the stars forever. But it begins in this place of saying, I will hang on even when it doesn't look like good things are going to happen. We have a call to remain faithful. And in the process, we lead people into eternal righteousness and shine like stars forever. We get to change things. What we're going to do today, as we head towards the close, is we're going to take communion together. But before we do, I want to encourage you to bring your life to God. Have you been stuck in anxiety, bitterness, or regret? Do you feel worn? Today, do you need to remind yourself of the nature and character of God?
Thanks for listening to this week's message. To learn more about our church, visit c3chch.org.